carrying out criminal wars around the world, on bailing out Wall Street derivative bubbles, on doing nothing to repair the real economy, the physical economy. What they call a recovery in the West is when they can get nations to pay their debts by printing new money. But the physical economy, the industrial, agricultural, infrastructure economy of Europe and the U.S. are an utter disaster. We're looking at the threat of war, and Wall Street is looking for this war because they realize that with the West in a state of absolute collapse, and with the BRICS putting together this burst of creative development, let me just mention that we just published this report. Mr. Lyndon LaRouche and Helga LaRouche published this report called The New Silk Road Becomes the World Land Bridge. The view of Xi Jinping with his alliance with Russia and India and the other BRICS nations, and really all of Africa and South America and most of Asia, are carrying out development on a global scale, building a new canal in Nicaragua, working with the Egyptians. Mr. Sisi, Al-Sisi was just in China, where they're working together on building the new Panama Canal. Russia's agreed to build 12 nuclear power plants in India. This is a global burst of development, which is basically saying to the world, including the U.S. and Europe, join us. Stop your self-destructive policies of bailing out banks rather than building the real economy, and end this insane push for war with China and Russia. Because indeed, we're threatened with a war that could become thermonuclear very quickly and could end civilization. Anybody who doesn't realize how dangerous that threat is in a stupor, is sleepwalking into war in a worse way than we were in 1914. And what Mr. and Mrs. LaRouche are doing with this process is to bring America to work with the BRICS nations, which means implementing the Glass-Steagall policy that we've long fought for to end the reign of terror. As the other speaker here said, the oligarchs, the Wall Street financial interests, have run this country, especially under the Bush and Obama administrations. The only way to end that is by ending the power of Wall Street's speculative core through implementing the FDR policy of Glass-Steagall and saving our commercial banking system. We do, as he said, need desperately an FDR approach, which is the Glass-Steagall bill that we've put into the Congress, both houses, can be passed. It can be passed now in January, if we have the mobilization of this nation to recognize that the world is sitting on a precipice of potential destruction, or the launching of a true global renaissance by getting the U.S. to link up with this this impulse from the BRICS.
Well, why isn't then Ian Williams, the United States, or Europe for that matter, listening? Because, well, we can see that they're not listening. The U.S. has been actually accused of attacking some of the BRIC countries. Not literally, but through this U.S. dollar-dominated economy. For example, what happened with elections in Brazil with Dilma Rousseff, where the U.S. government came out and alleged that Dilma Rousseff had some funny goings with the economy there and the money there. Why is the U.S. always countering the BRIC countries? Does the U.S. feel threatened, in other words?
Well, when we say the U.S., one of the problems with the U.S. is which U.S.? There's the old isolationist U.S., there's the old Cold War U.S., there's the neoliberal U.S. that wants to interfere everywhere. And these are always contending for dominance in foreign policy in Washington. So you have these erratic responses. In general, Brazilian-U.S. relations seem to have stabilized because the U.S. has accepted that Brazil is a significant power and is not going to do what it's told. Similarly with India, Modi is not anti-U.S. ideologically. If anything, he's a far-right conservative neoliberal. What he shares in common with some of the others is a fairly authoritarian and nationalist tendency. And he's just as likely to go to the U.S. for weapons. He's reached out to Israel, the big U.S. ally. So I don't really see any undying ties between Modi and China in particular. China and Russia, there is a lot of tension there. What these people all have in common is they don't like being told what to do by the US for various reasons. You know, and they all are resource-rich, rapidly advancing countries like South Africa, which has a distinct, it has minerals, it has a productive capacity, it has technological advances.
Well, let me jump in here.
In many ways,
in
South Africa,
although it's smaller, is a more developed economy than Russia. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Ian Williams. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Ian Williams, but I need to jump in on what you said, that these countries are resource-rich.
Sure.
Mike Billington, let me get a reaction from you. There was this meeting that took place of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, in which it had plans also to include India, Pakistan, and Iran. This was held in Dushanbe. And if you get all these countries aboard the SCO, you're talking about, what, about 30, 35% of the world's energy resources. And if they all come on board with China and Russia regarding this, marginalizing of the dollar, then the dollar would be in trouble, wouldn't it?
Well, again, it's not money. You can't look at the current global crisis in terms of money. The Russians and the Chinese, as you've been discussing, are taking measures to deal with the financial blowout in the West. But what's happening is not money. It's development. It's a question of the destruction of the physical economy of Europe and the United States, as opposed to the burst of real physical development. And you have to get your mind off money. Money is worthless. It's nothing. It's the idea of credit. What Alexander Hamilton, one of the American founding fathers, discovered in his founding of America was the idea of a creditary system rather than a monetary system. And the BRICS nations are following in that path to say, we're not going to be destroyed by financial warfare against Russia or any other similar operations. We're going to make sure that the physical development, the uplifting of the human race, the standard of living, the capacity to develop creative thinking human beings is our priority. Now, people in America have, and in Europe, have a great deal of problem trying to understand that the Chinese especially are not like them. They don't think geopolitically. They're not thinking about how can we take over the West? How can we become the new imperial power? If you look at a map, as we do in our report, if you look at the map of Africa's rail developed by the colonial powers and put that next to that, the plans for rail development in Africa, largely by the Chinese, but also the Koreans and the Russians and others, you see the difference. The colonial powers only built railroad knives sticking into Africa from the port to the raw materials to extract everything they possibly could, and nothing connecting the countries, nothing allowing for the development of their physical economies. When Li Keqiang was in Africa, he said, we are going to build high-speed rail connections between the capitals of Africa. You look at this map, cross-African rail connections. The Chinese need raw materials too, as the colonial powers did, but they're paying for it with real development, dams, water projects, nuclear power facilities. They're building nations, and they believe in the common interest of mankind, what Xi Jinping calls the win-win approach for the new Silk Road and the new maritime Silk Road.
Mm-hmm.
This is the future if we have the courage in the West to reverse this bestial, militarist, war-mongering policy and self-destructive economic policy and return to the true American principles that Franklin Roosevelt
represented. Let me get a reaction from Ian Williams. Do you think the U.S. will do that? That is the premise being you agree with Mike Billington there.
Well, I don't think the U.S. is going to do that unless there's a commercial self-interest. U.S. and European investors will build a railroad if they think they can make a lot of money out of it. The Chinese have different motives. They have geopolitical motives. And I don't believe they're quite as idealistic as we're talking about. The current rulers of China have long ago given up any great ideology. They're about power and control and making money. They use Chinese workers to build these facilities. They don't develop local talents and crafts to build. They don't support local industries. So in their own way, they're almost as destructive as the imperial powers. But they're after the same resources. They've been buying land in Africa so that they can take the produce, the food there, to feed China in the future. So we're not talking about a clash of angels on one side and demons on the other side here. We're talking about pretty much a lot of demons on all sides who are rampant and uncontrolled in their greed. And right. one of the problems is how can people in their own countries get control of their resources and develop them without that type of, without handing them over to the oligarchs? The whole of Russia, for example, is based on an act of plunder and looting in the post-Soviet era. And the difference is between those who are charged okay. with corruption is those who use their loot to support the current government and those that don't.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're out of time here. I do apologize. I wish we could get Mike Millington in here. But that does it from the Asia Desk Executive Intelligence
Review. Let me just say that I think...
Go ahead,
I
Mike Millington, in about 10, 15 seconds.
Yes, that's absolutely insane. The reality is that the nations of Eurasia have changed their course. They are, in fact, committed to the common aim of mankind. And what the LaRouche movement is doing is trying to get people in the West, these typical British okay. imperial thinking,
I'm sorry, to change I got to jump in.
Thank you.
From the Asia Desk Executive Intelligence Review, Mike Millington there, and from Foreign Policy
Thanks
and Focus,
lot.
Ian Williams from New York. Thank you very much for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. When we come to Taiwan, the entire team in the capital of Tehran is goodbye.